Hey there. Welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
John Steinbach.
And I'm the intern, Roger Blanco.
That's right. We're all here this time.
I haven't been here for two episodes.
I know. It's great to have you back.
Still, everything's still standing, I see. So
yeah,
we
haven't burned anything down anything like that.
Nothing that couldn't be rebuilt.
Exactly. We've got a fun episode on tap for you here today. This week's special guest will be someone we all know quite well, but our listeners here to the Bandwagon probably don't. Alan Montecelio, producer for the 21st, is a huge NBA fan. So he's coming in. We'll get his take on the NBA playoffs, which have gotten started here in the last week or so. We'll see what Alan thinks about what might happen this year. A little more wide open, it appears, than in the past few years on the NBA playoffs. So that's coming up in just a bit. Lisa's got controversy for us.
Yes.
Coming up a little bit later in the
episode. The always controversial Lisa Braltz.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we'll have our status update. But first, some news of the week. Boston Marathon was run on Monday in Boston. And first, University of Illinois representing Tatiana McFadden wins her fifth Boston Marathon in the women's wheelchair race. She had been kind of slowed down last year. She had some blood clots.
Right. I was going to ask, fifth in how many years? Like fifth in six, fifth in 7 years?
I would have to go back and look to make sure, but it's in a relatively short span, like fifth
amazing.
At the most about 8 years.
Yeah.
I mean, she's been just on top of that pedestal for a long time in women's wheelchair racing. So great to see her win. Women's running race won by Desiree Linden, first American woman to win since 1985. And kind of a common theme of this year's Boston Marathon was that the times were a lot slower than they usually are just because the weather was brutal. Rain, winds, temperatures, I think around 40 degrees or so.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah. Just brutal conditions. And it was Desiree's first major marathon victory of any kind. She had finished second in Boston like 7 years ago, came up just short on a sprint to the finish, I think losing by 2 seconds it was. And Runner's World has a great article about her win that we'll share out to everyone.
First U.S. woman in quite a while.
Yeah, 85 was the last one. But she was one of those marathoners who was never... She was never one that got signed to a major shoe deal or anything like that. She came out of college and basically had to beg to get into a kind of a top training program, and just kept plugging away, getting better. And now she wins Boston. So congratulations to Desiree Linden.
And she's 35, I think.
34.
Yeah. One interesting tidbit that I heard was they were talking to her this morning. Yesterday? I can't remember anymore. It's all starting to blend together, but the music she was listening to as she crossed the finish line was
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, like Depresso area, Johnny Cash. Like the journalist interviewing her was like, this is not the most like bumpin' inspiring music in the world for me to be listening to. And I thought it was that was an interesting choice for her, but I could totally see it, especially along with the weather, the way the weather was.
Yeah.
For her. So
for
I thought
sure.
that was interesting.
Yeah. Congratulations, Desiree.
I think even more interesting was the woman who came in second named Sarah Sellers, who's like a nurse.
Yeah.
And basically signed up to run because her brother was running, and no one had ever heard of her before. And when she crossed the finish line, they said, "You came in second." She thought, like, for her age group or something, which is fascinating. And then I don't have his name in front of me, but the guy who won was from Japan. I remember when we were talking a while ago, Brian, you were I didn't really know much about marathon runners who's the elite people. They only run like one or two a year, right? Competitively.
Yeah.
Well, this guy from Japan, like, he runs like a couple a month, and he's not a professional either. Apparently, he has a full time job. He has all these different training techniques. I think it's interesting that the weather was probably partially a factor, but pretty interesting that these people who sort of are putting marathon running on its head, like you only run two a year, you have to train in mountains and do these specific things. So I think it's pretty cool.
So I have a question about the woman who came in second. Mm-hmm. So she must have, like, she signed up because her brother was running, but she must have run a qualifying race. Or do you only have to qualify, like, one time, or do you have to qualify every year?
You have to qualify every
year,
I think. Yeah.
So it wasn't like she was like, oh, Jack is running, so I'm going to run and kick his butt.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much like that.
It says that she was a standout runner at Weber State University, and she qualified for Boston after, I guess she won the Huntsville, Utah Marathon in September with a pretty good time. So, I mean, it's not like crazy. It's not like she was running like five-hour marathons and won, but it was just interesting that, you know, no one expected her to, and she wasn't like a favorite coming in or anything.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's awesome. A nurse, how do you find time to train? Like,
I don't know, because I'm that's one reason I've not even tried a full marathon is that I just haven't had the time to put in for training on that.
Yeah,
so.
I was shocked to learn, like, because my son ran the full marathon last year, and I was shocked to learn just like, you know, it takes hours.
Yeah.
And hours a week because you're making these run. You're not running the full marathon, but you'll run 18 miles, and it takes a while to do that. Like it's a huge time commitment. So
she says she fits her workouts in at either 4 a.m. before work or 7 p.m. after her 10-hour shifts.
Wow,
that's dedication.
I feel like a total loser.
Yeah, it makes me feel a little bit bad about myself.
Ditto.
Or a lot.
Ditto. Congrats to all the winners
awesome.
At the Boston Marathon. Also in the news this week, transfers. It is transfer season in college basketball. That in and of itself isn't that unusual. But John Steinbacher, there seems to be kind of an Illinois to Missouri pipeline going on this year.
Yeah, I think if anyone follows Illinois sports, especially basketball, you're familiar with Mark Smith transferring to Missouri. He announced that, I think, last week. Mark Smith was a big-time recruit, Mr. Basketball, coming into Illinois last year. He had originally, I think, committed to Missouri to play baseball quite a while ago.
Yeah.
After he became he had some sort of injury that he couldn't pitch anymore, so he became a basketball player, rising basketball player. Had a pretty disappointing season for Illinois. I think I don't think anyone, you know, expected him to transfer. I think people thought he still had a lot of potential. Apparently, he kind of clashed with Underwood and his system. Rumors are quite clear that it was his dad who was not very happy with the playing time and how Mark was being used, so he decided to transfer. And he transferred to Missouri, which was interesting because that's where Quanzo Martin coaches. He Jeremiah Tillman, who had committed to John Gross last year, decommitted and went there. Same thing with Pickett. I forget what his first name is.
Javon
Pickett. So, you know, that rivalry is heating up. Of course, Mark Smith won't be able to play next year, but he'll be able to play the year after that. And I would say good on Underwood and the U of I athletics department for not saying you can't transfer to Missouri or other Big Ten teams. I know some coaches do that. So I'm happy that Mark Smith got to choose wherever he went. Also, apparently, Garrick McGee, who was the offensive coordinator for Illinois football until he was let go recently, signed, and I don't know what position, it's not offensive coordinator, but he signed, so he's now going to be coaching with the Missouri football team, and we're going to be playing them in a couple years. And then, I just saw this, thanks to the News Gazette, Scott Ritchie says that four players from this year's Illinois volleyball team are transferring, and quite a few. I think three are going. Oh, actually, three, maybe four are going to Missouri. And this is actually the first time since 2010 the Illinois volleyball team has had any transfers. Now, this one seems like it might actually be a good news, bad news situation. You hate to have people transferring, but my understanding is that there's just Thomas, so much talent coming in that it was more a concern that these women were going to have enough playing time, so they're transferring out not because they're I don't know about personal whatever, but they're transferring not because they think the team is on decline, but because there's so much talent coming in they were going to have trouble getting enough time to play. So anyway, there's a lot of Illinois Missouri stuff going on. There's going to be some good rivalries. I'm looking forward to some of those games.
So I have a question about coaches sort of dictating where a player who is transferring, how can they enforce that?
The NCAA, I think, has certain guidelines in place, and I would have to look at the exact rule to make sure. But my understanding of it is that you can put a, like certain schools on the list. Like I don't know how. Like the one that I remember most recently was Bo Ryan, really limiting a player who left and transferred to Iowa, I think it was, and basically saying, well, if you want to go to any Big Ten school, then not only did they have to like sit out, but there was like something else, like they couldn't even get on scholarship or something weird. It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah, and I think that happens less and less nowadays. But I think the argument, the very convoluted and dumb argument would be like, oh, this player knows the system so well. If he goes over there, they're going to be able to scout us and play defense, blah, 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 blah.
With the scouting now, everybody knows what
everybody exactly. It's a whole – in fact, yesterday – well, I'll save it for the social media segment, actually.
All right. A tease for social
media. But it's related to scouting.
All right. Outstanding. Okay. One other thing to talk about off the top here, and I know, Lisa, you got a kind of a firsthand look at this. But City of Las Vegas, new to major professional sports with the Las Vegas Golden Knights of the NHL, having a great first season. They're into the playoffs.
They just swept
the Kings.
Yep. All right. So not only are they in, they're having a good run so far. And it looks like Vegas jumping on that Golden Knights bandwagon.
Vegas, baby. Yeah, so I had to go to Las Vegas a couple weeks ago for work and had actually on the plane read an article in the New York Times, which we will provide a link to. There were a couple of articles sort of pre-playoffs, still during the regular season, toward the end, sort of like – you know, glowingly praising Las Vegas, the hockey team, the Knights, the Golden Knights. I'm sorry, John, you're not wearing your hat.
I have it. I can take a picture.
We should totally do that. So anyway, these articles were crowing about their success. They're an expansion team. I think they're the 31st team in the NHL. Las Vegas, of all places, like, you know, why were they getting a hockey team? Who is going to care in Las Vegas? I had never been to Las Vegas before, so all I just thought, like, people don't even live in Las Vegas. Why would they care about hockey? So they've had a great season. The New York Times is, like, not just lavishing praise on them for that, but also the way they did it. I am not exactly sure how they acquired all of their players. I don't know if they sort of pull from a bunch of other teams and then add other players. But basically, I hesitate to use the term cheaped out on the roster. I don't think it was like, oh, we don't have any money and we gotta, you know, cheap out on the roster. But they didn't spend as much money as one would think they would have to spend in order to have not just a good season, but make an actual run in the playoffs. And so, so they were able to roster build and successfully put together a team that on paper, if you're looking at salaries, was not necessarily indicating to anybody that they were going to be anything amazing. So I think, you know, just going back to a previous episode where we've talked about intangibles like chemistry, they've clearly got that. But what they also have is rabid fan support. I could not believe it when I got there. I mean, the first thing you see when you get off a plane in Las Vegas is a bunch of slot machines. But the second thing I saw was information about the hockey team, like on the marquees and stuff, as we were taking a cab to our hotel and stuff. It was amazing. And then we went out walking on the strip and we're getting some In-N-Out burger, which I had never had before in my life. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I look up and there's just a person on a balcony in one of the hotel rooms or maybe a penthouse or something waving this enormous Golden Knights flag just like right over our heads. And then when we walked you know, to a bar to get a beer or whatever, like it was on TV, the hockey team was on TV and everybody was watching it. Like the Angels were also playing and I think one TV was actually on that game and that Japanese player who's amazing, like hit a home run or something. And it was
Ohtani.
Yeah. I can never remember his name. Sorry. And but nobody cared about that because they were all too busy watching the hockey game. And to me, it was just really interesting to be there. I, of course, went down some rabbit holes about hockey and discovered that part of the way that they discovered that there was a market for hockey in desert climates or warm climates, so not just desert, but like California or even the South, was when Wayne Gretzky was traded to Los Angeles in the early 90s. It really brought people out like crazy, and that's when they realized that there was an appetite for hockey in warmer climes, and that's why now you see hockey teams in places or you might not expect a hockey team like Tampa or something.
There's a lot of Canadians and a lot of like Chicago, Minneapolis people have moved down to Arizona, Las Vegas, I think.
That helps.
Las Vegas is one of the fastest growing cities in the And I think that's interesting the way you talked about how they embraced it. I was also in Las Vegas recently, family trip to Grand Canyon took us through there, and that's where I got my hat. And I think for years, Las Vegas has wanted a professional sports team, but there's been resistance because of the gambling business and thinking like, I mean, it's kind of crazy because if you wanted to throw a team, you wouldn't have to do it in Las Vegas and all that stuff. But I mean, it's really crazy how much they embrace it. Everyone was asking me about my hat and like, oh, you're local. And I was like, oh, God, no, I'm not. I my head was going to burn. And I liked the logo. And I mean, I knew a little bit about the Knights and how good they're doing. But yeah, people were crazy.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. And Roger and I were talking a little bit before we came upstairs. You know, I like a good underdog story. And that's part of the reason why this is a bandwagon I can totally jump on. Like another bandwagon I can totally jump on because I'm on this one. But because I like a good underdog story. But what I really like are underdogs who are no longer underdogs. They're good. They're consistently good. It wasn't a fluke, you know, that they're able to build into something really strong. So while I am thrilled to see them doing so well, and I'm going to follow them all the way through, and maybe they'll win everything. Who knows? Like, wouldn't that be crazy? I'm very curious to see how they do next year. And we're going to talk a little bit about this later, not about this particular thing, but aren't the Raiders moving to Las Vegas too? Yeah. When is that happening?
2019.
Okay, yeah. So if they were like, if this is a good test run to see how the locals would respond to having a team of some kind, I would say. The support has been amazing. Yeah, it is great.
I saw so much Raiders stuff when I was there. It's crazy how excited, because it's not even 18 months, how already insanely excited they are for the Raiders.
Yeah, here we go.
All right. Welcome to the big time, Las Vegas.
That's so funny.
At least in sports.
Yeah, know, right.
You're already there and all sorts of other stuff. But welcome to big time sports. So that's some news here the last couple weeks on the bandwagon. Coming up next, we'll dive into the NBA playoffs with our resident NBA expert, the 21st producer, Alan Montecelio. That's coming up next. Stay tuned here on the bandwagon. Pleased to welcome into the bandwagon for his debut, producer extraordinaire from the 21st, Alan Montecelio, who's also a huge NBA fan. With the start of the playoffs, we thought it'd be great to bring you in.
Great to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you with us here.
Do I say I'm it's great to join the bandwagon or to hop on the bandwagon?
Hopping on is good. All right.
Yeah, whatever vernacular you choose will work. NBA playoffs first round underway. We're talking on Wednesday here, and still in the midst of the first round, and I won't rub it in too much, but your Blazers are not off exactly to a great start here.
It's tough. It's tough stuff. I mean, by the time people listen to this, I don't know whether they will have gone down 0-3 against New Orleans or not, but they dropped the first two games at home. And that crowd, I'm sure, is really crushed because, you know, the Moda Center is a great crowd, too. And Dame and CJ just did not bring it. And it's one of those things where this was supposed to be I don't want to say this was supposed to be the year, but there was a point in the middle of the regular season where they won maybe 10 or 12 straight, and they thought, man, this is the year that we finally go from like being a 500 team to maybe even challenging, maybe pushing the Warriors in round two. Maybe Steph's injury lingers, and maybe Dame and CJ go off, and we can get to the conference finals, and then they just drop the first two at home. I mean, to be fair, Anthony Davis is really good at basketball.
Yes, this is true. This is true, mono brow and all.
Exactly. He's very good at hoops. So it's tough stuff right now in Portland.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know, just a more general overview of the playoffs here, at least to me, someone who doesn't follow it super close, but at least keeps tabs on things, it seems so much more wide open this season than it's been in a long time.
I mean, yeah, and I think that's really exciting. I mean, I think lots of people like you are probably in that position where they looked at the last 4 years, and even if you're not a hardcore fan, you know, like, oh, it's the Warriors and the Cavs. Oh, it's in the Warriors. I mean, this would have been, it was three straight years of LeBron versus the Warriors, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I think even a lot of hardcore fans were like, come on, let's get something new in here. And so I think people were worried that, you know, the dominance of the Warriors and LeBron would just kind of cause the league to be shrink in and become less competitive. But it actually, in a way, pushed them to make bigger? I mean, just look at the Chris Paul trade for the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets looked at the Warriors and they're like, no, we're not going to shrink and wait for the Warriors to stop being good. We're going to challenge them right now. And then obviously Steph's been injured and the Cavs have looked weaker than they ever had. And then Kyrie Irving joins the Celtics. I mean, it's been nuts. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So who to you, Alan, is the biggest surprise in the playoffs? And who is the most likely to, I guess, at this point? I mean, it seems like it's a pretty wide open field. As I was telling Brian off mic earlier, who isn't in the playoffs? I've never really seen, like, I didn't realize it was 16 teams in the playoffs to start, but that does explain the length of the season. Yeah. So, I'm curious to know who are the surprises in the playoffs for you, given, earlier when the season began, we talked to our other basketball expert, Travis Tate. He came in and kind of gave us our predictions. And now I'm asking you to sort of round it out here for the end of the season.
I mean, it's got to be the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah. I mean, this year, I think it was the Vegas over-under on them was 40 to win 40 games out of 82 in the regular season. They won 52 games. Won their last 16 games in the regular season with Joel Embiid, their star player, one of their star players, out. And, this was after years of what's called tanking. Mm-hmm. You may have heard about something called the process.
Oh, yes.
Years of really losing on purpose to get good draft picks and knowing that, like, hey, we need to draft transcendent players so they can get us back into the playoffs. And this year they took this amazing leap. Ben Simmons is like 21 years old and he looks like Magic Johnson. It's unbelievable. So even just the fact, I mean, like, look, as we're recording now, they're tied 1-1. They got punched in the mouth a bit by Miami the other night. But the fact that they have home court advantage in the first round when they missed the playoffs last year by a lot is pretty incredible. And they're going to be the team of the future. It's them and Boston in the East. It's going to be pretty fantastic.
Have you seen that video edit of Ben Simmons interspersed with footage of Magic Johnson? Have you guys seen it?
I haven't yet.
I got to find it. It's so good. Nicely done.
I can't believe that NBA players are the same species as us, to be honest. These are 6'10 guys who are like, who can run faster than any of us here in this? I mean, maybe they can't run for as long as you, Brian, but they're certainly faster. And who can jump super high? And they're like 21 years old. I'm just like, how is this possible? So Ben Simmons is really something special. And so the Sixers this year have really been a major story.
So despite the Curry injury and the supposed demise of the Warriors, they are currently up 2-0 against the Spurs. This is a matchup we'd be used to seeing a little later in the playoffs, I think, given these two teams' pedigree in the past. And I understand you're a little bit of a Spurs fan. So what's going on there? Is Golden State actually still going to just wipe through the playoffs like they normally do?
They'll definitely wipe through the Spurs.
Yeah.
It's really a shame when we think about the last few years, we never got to see the Warriors and the Spurs play each other at full strength because last year Kawhi Leonard got injured in game one after Zaza Pachulia closed in on him and caused him to sprain his ankle. This year, that's been Kawhi being out the whole year, essentially. The Warriors, I mean, I think that if Steph is back in himself, I still think the Warriors are the favorites. Not everyone agrees with that now. The Rockets have been really, really good, and I think right now, again, at the beginning of the season, I think people thought, oh, the Warriors are going to stomp through the playoffs and it's going to be a non-story and the NBA won't be fun. But not only have other teams gotten better, but the Steph injury really changes things because Steph Curry is the Warriors. Everything they do is based on the fact that Steph Curry can shoot from 40 feet. and that I mean, people, casual fans look at that and say, oh, well, he can just shoot from far away. But what that does to the floor, if you have to guard someone that far out, that just changes the geometry of the whole floor. And, like, people have – other players get open looks. Other people can drive to the basket. So – but it really depends on – I mean, Steph is not going to be in action for the first round. He might come back in the second round. We'll just have to see how it goes. But, for the Spurs, I mean, it's just tough. It's been a tough year. It's been 21 years in the playoffs, 5 championships, but – man, like it's tough to watch.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the East, because that's been LeBron's domain for a long time. And, the Cavs started off the year kind of sluggish. They made all those moves at the deadline. They still don't look like they're a team that's going to make a run all the way to the finals. They lost game one to Indiana at home. Who do you think's coming out of the East this year?
Oh, man, this is tough, because part of me still believes – I'm going to bet – I will not bet against LeBron until someone beats him. Mm-hmm. They looked bad in game one against Indiana. Indiana's good, by the way. People have been surprised. They're not on national TV games a lot because they're a small market. But Indiana's really good. Victor Oladipo is really good. But on the it's tough because if the Celtics had their best players, I would pick them. And the Raptors here's how I'll know. If the Cavs make it out of round one and the Raptors play out of round one, they meet in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. And LeBron has owned the Raptors for years. And in game one, if the Raptors are shook, then it's over. LeBron's going to take it and go to the NBA Finals. But if the Raptors can come out and say, no, we're a different team. We're getting over the hump. We're not afraid of you anymore. Then maybe you'll turn out differently. The Cavs don't look good, but LeBron's still the best player in the world. And I'm not going to bet against him until someone beats him.
I have a question for you about the Timberwolves.
Okay.
So I'm just curious to know what you think of their first appearance in the playoffs in 14 years. Now, my understanding, I did not watch the game the other night. I plan to be watching tonight. But all I could find on the internet after the game was over was that James Harden torches Minnesota for 44 points. But then I was stunned to see that they only lost by 3 points. So I'm curious to know what you think of their appearance in the playoffs and what you think will happen in this series. You can go ahead. You will not hurt my feelings. I'm in the tank for anything Minnesota, so I'm just curious to hear what you think.
So I have a lot of positive thoughts, except for the fact that Houston is going to stomp them, and I'm sorry about that because Houston's the best team. Houston's the best team in the league.
I'm used to that.
Well, right. I mean, this is exciting, right? They hadn't been in the playoffs for 14 years.
Totally.
And I think, frankly, I don't know how much you've been following the Timberwolves at all, but I'm sure that for a lot of casual fans, they probably fell off the radar because they weren't very good.
Right.
This is really exciting for them that they get into the playoffs. It's a little strange that they had to win the last game of the season to get in because they have a lot of talent. I mean, they got Jimmy Butler from the Chicago Bulls, and Karl-Anthony Towns is a really special talent. The one thing that was tough about that game is the Rockets didn't shoot that well, but Karl-Anthony Towns took 8 shots in the whole game, and he needs to shoot more. They need to just give him the ball. I think it's a weird situation in Minnesota because they have an incredible amount of young talent. They have veteran talent now. They have a coach who's been there, but they don't. It's a weird team. Like, I look at that team on paper, I'm like, this team should be a lot better. And on the one hand, they've come a long way. They've made it to the playoffs, and that's really exciting. But there needs to be, there's just that it factor. I don't really know how to describe it. That teams like the Warriors have, teams even like the Sixers have that haven't. I need to see like an amazing game from Karl-Anthony Towns where he's like, mm-hmm. I'm the guy, and you need to watch out for me. And he needs to get like 40 points and 15 rebounds because he can do it. He's 7 feet tall and he can shoot from three and he's big and he's fast. It's really, I think Minnesota fans should be really excited about Karl-Anthony Towns, and they should be furious when he shoots less than 20 times a game.
It sounds like the team is engaging in a little Minnesota nice, like, I'm not going to have a dominant game. You have a dominant, no, really, you should have the dominant game.
If you heard Coach Tom Thibodeau, he is not Minnesota nice.
No,
if you tune into a game, you can hear him he has this like growling sound. It's kind of amazing.
I'll listen for him tonight when I watch.
Guard the pick and roll.
Exactly, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the pace of the NBA playoffs, especially, and I don't want to do a direct comparison, that might be a different story, but, you know, coming off the NCAA tournament where everything sort of happens so fast, you're in, you're out, the NBA playoffs pace is a lot more deliberate. How do you feel about that as a fan?
I think as a hardcore fan, I love it, but I can totally see why people aren't into it. I can't blame anyone for not watching the first round. I think it was a big mistake to change the first round to a 7-game series. I think when it was a 5-game series, it was a lot more exciting, a lot more room for upsets. Right, with college basketball and the other way around, like, I don't watch the season, but then when you get to the March Madness, it's exciting because each game matters a lot. On the one hand, I like that in for long series in basketball, I think a lot of times the better team wins. I think you have teams get to make adjustments, and you can really see, I think there's a story within the playoffs where like people get better, they make adjustments. But it's tough. Like I don't fault people for not wanting to watch it until it gets to like the conference finals. It takes a really long time. It's a long season. And then even within the games, I think there are things that can make it more exciting. Like whenever whenever I'm watching basketball with my girlfriend, who, you know, she'll watch sometimes. She's not a huge fan, but, you know, part of me, like, wants her to like it. And it's, like, 2 minutes to go, and then they go to the replay.
A little
part of me just dies inside. Because basketball is so exciting, and then there's nothing more compelling than watching referees watch TV.
Exactly.
And we're starting to get that in soccer, too. I've seen the going to VAR all the time now.
And hockey,
it's like,
yeah.
Ugh, who cares?
Yeah, fun, watching monitors while referees decide things. I'm curious, just for you, how did you become a big NBA fan? How did your fandom develop? And, you know, you mentioned kind of following San Antonio. Portland makes sense. You lived there for several
Spurs
years.
Spurs doesn't make a lot of sense, huh?
No, but, yeah, how did all that
Never
come
been
about
to Texas. Gosh, well, I grew up watching... everyone has the VHS tapes that they grew up watching, the TV shows they grew up watching. I had, and I don't know where I got them, I grew up watching old basketball highlights from the 80s on VHS. I just had them around in my house, and that's what I watched.
You didn't happen to have
one
called NBA Superstars, did you?
I totally did. I had 1985, the LA Lakers championship team. It was called Return to Glory. It was like these like old school documentaries narrated by like Dick Stockton and Brent Musburger. I had 1984, Pride and Passion. Like they really sold the titles of these back in the day. And so I had all of those videos growing up, and I just watched the hell out of them. And I mean, my family likes basketball, but my dad was, I think his number one sport is golf, his number two sport is basketball. He really grew up liking Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics just because they wore the same color that his high school did.
Nice.
I don't know how much to attribute this to, but and I don't know how much you know this, but Filipinos love basketball.
Okay,
it's like it is the biggest sport in the Philippines by a lot.
Mm.
And I don't know how much to attribute my love of basketball to that because I didn't actually grow up in the Philippines, but definitely when I go back, and I mean, there's always NBA games. There's NBA games on. Here's how you know. In American airports, you go into the local airport and you see CNN. On the TV, and it makes me want to die. In the Philippines, you go and you see NBA games. So I don't know. It's a lot of different things, you know. I don't know which came first. It's like I love basketball, and I watched all these videos, or I'm Filipino. I don't know. But so that's there. I've just loved basketball since I was a kid, always. As for the Spurs, you know, I was 7 years old when I remember watching Michael Jordan in Game 6 in the 98 Finals.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm a kid, I'm cheering for the Bulls. Much like kids these days cheer for the Warriors. They're not maybe bound to a region, but they see like, oh, Steph Curry and the Warriors. This is the dominant team. This is like the Yankees and the Lakers. This is the team of the moment. And so you're a kid and you watch that. And so I was growing up watching the Bulls, and that was my team. And then he retired, and I thought that he'd be done with basketball at that time. So he retired, and I was like, I need a new team. And I remember watching the 1999 season, which was a weird season. It was a lockout.
Yeah.
There was no, I mean, of course, everyone's like, who's going to dominate the league? Because the Bulls are in the tank. Michael Jordan's gone. And I remember saying, I really like this Tim Duncan guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's really, really good. He is humble. He doesn't, you know, he's quiet. And I just like this team. And so that's where it started. And then over the years, as I grew up, I think the reasons I love the Spurs began to change a little bit. I eventually liked the fact that, you know, I was a quiet kid. Tim Duncan was a quiet guy. I grew up in an international setting. The Spurs are an international team. I don't like super confrontational, bad workplaces. And the Spurs really were a model for how to run an organization and how to, Tim Duncan, I think, is the greatest teammate of all time, and that's the reason why the Spurs were as successful as they were. So it really kind of just grew over time, and I also didn't like the Lakers. I didn't like Kobe and Shaq, and so it was great. They were a great team to cheer for against them in the 2000s. So it's been a long road with the Spurs, even though I have no connection to San Antonio whatsoever.
Well, you're talking to a Lakers fan.
I was going to say it's on now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, no, and that's fine. I mean, I can understand people not loving the Shaq Kobe.
Well,
years.
The funny thing about it though is like those years were like really like tough. Like, but I think that even Lakers fans now respect the Spurs in like 2015, 2016, 2017. Like I've talked to Lakers fans who are like, man, I hated Manu Ginobili in 2004, but now I actually really respect the guy. He's 40 years old and still dunking.
Still bringing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, hey, this has been fun.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Thanks, Alan.
Right. Yeah, Alan Montecelio, producer of The 21st, getting to stretch his wings a little bit, stretch his legs into some hot takes in the NBA.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad I don't have to be objective here.
Yeah, we'll give some really hot takes. No, I'm just kidding.
The Spurs should trade. Kawhi Leonard. There we go.
Oh, hey, there. The hottest of takes. Sal Montecelio joining us here on the Bandwagon. And stay tuned. Coming up next, we'll have a little controversy for you. That's next on the Bandwagon. Thanks again to Alan Montecelio for jumping on the Bandwagon to talk some NBA playoffs with us. It is now time for controversy, and back from her little hiatus, Lisa Braltz has that for us.
I'm here, and I'm just going to lead off by saying I've made a huge mistake by choosing this as a controversy because it is so huge and expansive and ongoing. And that controversy is franchise relocation.
Mm.
And in the United States, because it doesn't happen anywhere else. And here's some of the reasons why it doesn't happen. In the United States, the United States leagues are different from most leagues worldwide because they don't have a promotion and relegation system, you know. And so in promotion and relegation, teams that are at the bottom can rise up to the top if they have a really good year. And at the, you know, the in the English Premier League, for example, if you're in the lower three teams, you get kicked down to the next league down. So towns always have teams. The teams stay there because there's always a chance that they could rise up and be amazing. Also, in the United States, we don't have huge governing bodies that oversee a sport from top to bottom. So you have Major League Baseball, but that doesn't oversee like Little League or town leagues or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all governed differently. And really, the only way that a city can get a team in the United States is, as we were just as we discussed earlier about Las Vegas, there's expansion. There is forming or joining a rival league. And in Las Vegas's case, having a team relocate. So, of course, Las Vegas Raiders are relocating from Oakland. That's just never going to sound right to me. That's one of the things that I think is hard about relocation is for fans, not just fans like me who live really far away and are like, this doesn't sound right to say St. Louis Rams. Like, what's that all about? But also for the people who live in these towns and who are really invested in these teams. Like, are they able? Will their fandom travel? You know, like, are old fans just not going to get respect, you know, anymore because of these new fans in new places? So in terms of, like, if a city wants a team now in most sports, Las Vegas, as we mentioned, is like the 31st team in the NHL. Pretty much everybody is done expanding with the definite exception of the MLS, the Major League Soccer. They'll expand a little bit more, but they're close to reaching like perfect league size. And so the NFL, MLB, they all have like perfect league size. So expansion's not going to really be a possibility. Rival leagues typically do not do very well, or at least not long term. They're just not viable long term. So it's relocation.
Yeah.
And sometimes teams relocate like within cities. That's happened before. But really, relocation is kind of it. So there's so much to discuss with relocation, and I want you guys to talk about some of the more recent relocations because I'm more about expansion teams and I follow, you know, smaller sports. But I did unearth something called the 10 most devastating franchise relocations in professional sports history, but it's from 2011, and I'm sure there have been more devastating ones since then. But what was interesting is four of the top 10 were hockey team relocations out of Canada.
Yeah.
You know, a couple that I would have expected to see in the top 10 didn't even make the list, although they're acknowledged with the Brooklyn Dodgers, New York Giants, Los Angeles Raiders situation, the Houston Oilers, Charlotte Hornets. Relocations involving those teams did not make the top 10.
I'm guessing one that did was when Seattle Supersonics moved to Oklahoma City.
I believe that might even be the top one. I printed out 22 pages.
Oh, all right.
What about the Colts?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that's in here.
Colts from Baltimore and Indianapolis.
They famously left, like, in the middle of the night, right? Like,
yeah, with the Atlas
moving
vans.
I remember that. And also, the Minnesota North Stars, the hockey team that I grew up on, living in Minnesota, relocated to Dallas in the late 90s and actually won their first franchise title in Dallas, which was, like, smarted so hard for Minnesota fans. Mm-hmm. But then 2 years later, they got the Wild. So Minnesota has hockey again. But I can't tell you how strange it was for me to hear, like, the Dallas Stars. you know, and Minnesota didn't have a hockey team for a couple of years. It was really weird.
Yeah, and another one that certainly I think NFL fans will remember is when the Cleveland Browns moved to Baltimore, became the Ravens.
Yes.
And shortly thereafter, Cleveland got an expansion franchise, but they haven't done anything.
Funny you would mention that one, Brian, because my favorite picture in this entire massive printout that I've made is a picture of a fan holding up a sign that says Charlie Manson, Jeffrey Dahmer, Dr. Kevorkian, Art Modell.
the owner of
the Cleveland Browns.
Yes.
And the caption says, well, this says it all, which I thought was pretty funny. Baltimore Colts is like number two. And number one, Seattle Supersonics in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Anybody who knows more about that particular relocation is welcome to talk about it. The last thing I'll say about the idea, again, we could have a segment every podcast about a relocation and what it means. But for me, in the general terms, you know, I think of fans. I think of stadiums. We've talked in the past on the podcast about like stadiums being built and then being abandoned. And so I think of resources and fans and the culture that a sports team makes up as part of a fabric of an area or community. When we see expansion or relocation, work really well, like it appears it will in Las Vegas. Is that sustainable long term? How's that going to go? Because their new fans will be incredibly excited. But what about the old fans? Are they just supposed to transfer loyalties to whatever new football team has moved into their city? So it's really strange to me. And I have to wonder if sometimes some of the leagues overseas look at us and go, what are you guys doing? Like, if there's just so much money involved and again, like resources, and it puts a, you know, cities say they want teams, but we've talked about how they aren't necessarily the economic boons that we that the cities always like sort of are like, this is going to create hundreds of jobs and provide so much tax revenue, blah, blah, blah. Does that ever really work out? So I think for me, it's an ongoing area of interest. I'm sorry to drop such a big topic here in the middle of everything.
No, it's all right. I don't know a ton about that Seattle move, but I will say that acquaintances I have that are in Seattle, they're still really bitter about it.
Yeah.
It's been at least 10 years now.
I have definitely gotten that vibe that people are still mad.
They had some sick jerseys. I know I copped one of a Ray Allen Supersonics jersey. Those are always a classic.
Ah, yes.
In our country and Canada as well, the expansion happens. It's a way to not only move to different places and get better stadium deals, but it's a way to threaten your current city to get you a nicer stadium deal. I mean, Rogers White Sox famously were about to leave for Florida, or supposedly, until they got their the new stadium, which is now called Guaranteed Rate.
Not a big fan of that name. Not a big fan.
But I mean, I think that's one powerful thing. And I, at least I think, in your favorite sport, or I don't want to say that, but soccer, I know.
Yeah, that's cool. That's safe.
Columbus,
yes.
Right now, it's a huge deal. I don't know where that's at, but
I can't believe I didn't even bring that up.
They keep threatening to move to Austin.
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear that Austin really wants him, and it's unclear if the guy really wants to leave, or is he trying to get a better deal?
The situation is totally unclear at this time, and it's a long season. I mean, the MLS season just started, so they're going to have to play through all of this stuff while they're sorting it out.
Like a fan base that loves the team and just hates the owner. I mean, I guess that's how most sports work, but it's just, you're going to the games, you love the team, and at the same time you're reimbursing the person who's threatening. It's crazy. Yeah,
it is.
All right, relocation's always a controversial topic, one I'm sure we'll touch on again in the future. Thank you, Lisa.
Sure, thank you.
All right, status update time, y'all. Let's see what everybody's got to bring to the table this time around. Mr. Steinbacher?
Wait, you're going to start with me?
Oh, I'm starting with you.
My status update, and I know we go to the Deadspin well a lot, but they had an article the other day about a young girl in the front of a hockey, during warm-ups, she was right behind the glass, and I forget which team it was, but the player was trying to get her a puck, and he had to try like four times to get her the puck, and it kept giving it to the wrong people. But what made it really interesting was like the person from Deadspin went through and like diagrammed who all the people were and tried to guess like which dad was with which kid, And it was a really amusing article, and the person was so wrong because apparently the dad wasn't even anywhere close. And this girl's a huge hockey player, and the Deadspin writer had made all these assumptions about how they're super rich family because they're sitting in the front row, blah, blah, blah. But apparently they didn't think about the fact that this is just during warm-ups and they let everyone come down. So anyway, I'll link to it. Obviously kind of a tongue-in-cheek diagram article, but it also kind of blew up right in the writer's face, too. There you go.
All right. Roger Blanco, you have something for us this week?
Yeah. This is kind of a little bit controversial, but a few games ago, before the playoffs, it was between the Grizzlies and the Thunder. And the Thunder TV announcer, Brian Davis, I guess Russell Westbrook was playing just super great basketball, and he said during assist that he made, he said, Russell Westbrook was playing out of his cotton-picking mind. That's a no-go. Yeah. When one of my friends told me about it, and I was like, no way. He did not say that. He's like, yeah, look it up. And as soon as I saw the video, that was just... I was just in awe. Like, I had no idea.
Like, not awe in a good way.
No, yeah.
Dumbfounded.
Dumbfounded. Yeah. There we go. Good word.
I just had no idea how to react to that, and it threw me off. Like, I was... Like, I don't know how someone can think about that. They're in a game or anything. I know Russell Westbrook said that it was not okay. He's just trying to move on from it, and just trying to focus on the playoffs. But I know that's something that would still linger with me throughout.
Well,
you know.
It's interesting because I have thought recently about turns of phrase in the English language that are sports related. This isn't necessarily that. But it makes me wonder how many phrases we use when we're talking about sports, or when announcers are talking about sports, we learn these phrases when we're kids. We hear them in the media all the time, you know. So the phrase that he used is just something that, you know, has kind of been, it's like an old school term. So this might have been an older gentleman, too, who as the words were coming out of his mouth, if it had been me, I would have been like, no, do you hear how that sounds? I'm hoping that announcers are more attuned to some of the phrase turns of phrase that they're using.
Right. I haven't heard that term in a long time, but I never, it's one of those things I heard a lot growing up, and I just never, but until that moment, thought, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's exactly. Like,
I recognize the phrase, and I can't say I've ever used it, or at least not recently, but when Roger brought that up and I saw the article, I was like, wow. Yeah, I never even... all these things are embedded in our culture that are just horrible.
Has the announcer said anything in response? Like, did he apologize or be like, I didn't do anything wrong?
Not in this article, but I'm pretty sure he did. But I know he got suspended, of course.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure he issued an apology pretty quick afterward.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I feel like it could have been one of those situations where the words are coming out of his mouth, and as he's saying them, he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just did that.
Definitely deserves a suspension.
For sure.
All right, Lisa Braltz.
So in my Twitter feed a couple days ago, I ran across a tweet by Janet Rayfield and just kind of noticed and was like, oh, that's interesting, and then didn't think of it again until you guys brought up scouting and how scouting is so different now. Than it used to be. So all these rules around that coaches will be like, well, you can transfer, but not to this place or that place for scouting reasons. So Janet Rayfield tweeted, here's what scouting looked like in the dark ages. No sports code and iPads then. I don't know what sports code is. But basically she shows several pictures that are diagrams of players, where they tried shots or defensive plays or whatever. So there's diagrams of the goal in the box and the 18, all the way out there, which I thought was fascinating to see all these hand-drawn Janet Rayfield or whoever she has scouting for her diagrams talking about players, comments about players in black and blue ink, arrows, things crossed out. It's totally great. I love ephemera like that, so I was really glad she posted it. So, yeah, I don't know what sports code is. I'm assuming it's some kind of software where you can plug in information about potential recruits. But yeah, I thank Janet Rayfield, a previous guest here on the bandwagon, for showing us that pen and paper. We still can remember the days of pen and paper.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Thank you, Janet, sure. And thank you, Lisa.
Oh, sure.
Mine is just kind of the we've had just crazy weather here in the last few weeks, especially for the month of April. Snow, rain, cold.
I heard you say the word snow for tonight. We're recording
flurries.
This on Wednesday.
Yes,
yeah.
Flurries in the forecast tonight.
No.
The game between the Cubs and Cardinals that was scheduled for this afternoon has been called off. This is already the 25th game postponement in the first 3 weeks
Incredible.
Of the Major League Baseball season.
It's got to be a record.
Yeah, I'll have to look and see whether it's a record or not, but it's the most I can remember. And so the Cubs had a three-game series scheduled with St. Louis. They played one of those games last night. I think they had two of the three games against Atlanta postponed. No, they just one of them postponed against Atlanta over the weekend. So, yeah, they're getting like half of their homestand postponed.
Well, the whole White Sox Twins series in Minnesota just.
They got 15 inches of snow. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah, just plow away from the lines.
It's Minnesota. Let them play.
Right. Well, and
use
like
an orange ball. Or
what
something.
If exactly? Like, what if the soccer team had? I'm sure they would have canceled that game too, because 15 inches of snow is just too much. But certainly, the soccer diehards would have been all over that.
It is funny they do play soccer, or it seems like they play soccer and obviously football in much worse conditions. But as soon as they like, it's kind of cold. Everyone in baseball is like. Nope.
Don't want to do that. Yeah, and there was notes that, you know, the wind chill last night at Wrigley was like in the 20s, you know, it was like 35 at first pitch. I'm like, yeah, it's cold, but
yeah, deal with it.
Wind chill 20.
They're all, yeah. you can't even recognize any players because they're all wearing like those
balaclavas.
But it can be that cold in November or late October, you know, so.
For sure.
Anyway. Wow.
Anyway, it's cold. It's cold, folks.
Not into it.
I hear. I heard our weather person Andrew Pritchard said we might finally turn the corner this week. So
I'm going to hold him to that. By the way.
Yeah, he's a brave man for saying anything.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Words like turning the corner.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week. Time for some credits from Mr. Roger Blanco.
Yes, we want to thank you for joining us on the Bandwagon. Bandwagon is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Burltz, and John Steinbecker, and myself, Roger Blanco. Big thanks to this episode's special guest, basketball expert Alan Montecilio. Thanks also goes to Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, and musical genius Automatic Empire, who wrote and performed our theme and other music heard within. Find us at the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where you can stream us again and again and click all the links and stuff. Better yet, subscribe to Bandwagon and rate it in iTunes. No iTunes, no problem. You can also find us in Stitcher and NPR One, and we're always working on being available in other places. Follow us on Twitter at BNDWGNPDCST. All consonants, no vowels, to get our tweets. Please add us. We love it when you do. This was episode 53, we think, and we'll be back in a couple weeks for another episode about the often strange and always compelling intersections between sports and everything else under the sun. Until then, thanks for playing.